Elizabeth Elliot studied Greek in college with the goal of working as a Bible translator. Shortly after arriving in Ecuador, she married fellow missionary Jim Elliot, who was later killed while trying to reach out to the fierce Alca Indians, also known as the Wadani. Soon after the tragic incident, Elizabeth took her 3-year-old daughter Valerie, and they lived among the same Indian tribe that had killed her husband. Here on Gateway to Joy, Elizabeth shares with us the insights from her remarkable journey. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking with you again today about the Gospel of Mark. We've been reading those wonderful stories of miracles from the Gospel of Mark, and yesterday we raised the question as to why Jesus frequently told those who had received miracles not to tell anybody else. And I suggested that perhaps one reason that he wanted secrecy was that he knew that miracles would be demanded by people who would neither honor his Father or believe in him. And that is exactly what does happen when we come to chapter 6. In chapter 5, we have the raising of Jairus's daughter from the dead, and Jesus gave strict instructions not to let anybody know what had happened. And then in chapter 6, we find that the people in the synagogue, the leaders, the religious leaders, took offense at him. When the Sabbath day came, it says that he began to teach in the synagogue, and the congregation were astonished and remarked, "Where does he get all this? What is this wisdom that he has been given? And what about these marvelous things that he can do? He's only the carpenter, Mary's son, the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon. And his sisters are living here with us." In other words, what they were saying in effect was, "Who does he think he is?" They were deeply offended with him, it says. But Jesus said to them, "No prophet goes unhonored, except in his native town, or with his own relations, or in his own home." Last week, I gave you a definition of faith, the woman who came and touched Jesus' garment and was healed, and Jesus told her it was because of her faith. And faith means obedience to God, attentive submission of a finite woman to the reality of her Creator and Lord, obedient acceptance of the incomprehensible reality of God. She had no question about his power or his love. She came to him in simple trust. These people had plenty of questions about his power and his authority. So they didn't exercise faith. They refused to put their trust in Jesus himself. Faith is a flinging of oneself against the rock Christ Jesus. Abandonment of myself, of my preconceived notions of what God is supposed to do for me. It's not easy, is it, to abandon preconceived notions of what we think God ought to do for us. You did it for so-and-so, why didn't you do it for me? I had a letter not long ago from a lady who said, "Why doesn't God like me?" That's not a childlike attitude. To accept is to make room for, to respect. We reserve such regard only for one who proves himself. And to these who demanded other proofs than those that he had already given, he would not grant miracles. He would not grant the proofs that they were looking for. They were saying, in effect, his resume isn't good enough. And then in verse 7, we read that he summoned the 12 and began to send them out in twos, giving them power over evil spirits. And then the word gets to Herod about all these miracles that are coming about. And when Herod heard this, he said, "It must be John, whom I beheaded, risen from the dead." Wow, he's saying. How did this ever happen? Talk about divine power. Do you remember the story of how John the Baptist had lost his head? He was in prison because he had faced the king, Herod, with his adulterous action. And the king hated him for that, and the woman hated him, and so he was put into prison. And when the king gave a birthday party, the daughter of this woman danced, and the king was so pleased that he made a very foolish promise that he would give her anything she asked for, up to a half of his kingdom. And so the girl consulted her mother, and the mother's idea was, ask him for the head of John the Baptist. And so this silly girl and this evil, scheming mother succeeded in bringing about the decapitation of that faithful servant of God, John the Baptist. Now, if that doesn't cause you to think about some of God's methods, it certainly should. Maybe you should read that story again. The great lesson for all of us here is that obedience to God may cost you your life. John the Baptist wouldn't have been in prison if he had not been faithful to the truth of God about adultery. And it was because of that that he lost his life. I may have told the story of how I learned that the motto of the Coast Guard on the East Coast is, you have to go out, you don't have to come back. And when I heard that, it immediately grabbed me, and I thought, that's a perfect motto for us who want to follow Jesus Christ. You have to go out, you don't have to come back. As Jesus said, he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. Or he that saveth his life, or tries to preserve his own life, will lose it. It's not my business what happens when I obey God. It is my business to obey God. It is God's business what the consequences may be. Life or death, they are entirely up to God. A young woman told me recently that when she suggested to her friends that perhaps God was calling her to the foreign mission field, several people said to her, are you really sure you want to go into a place like that? What if you die? And this young girl, whose name is Lisa Guidry, a lovely girl who lives here in Massachusetts, her answer was, what if I die? I will die. What difference does it make where or when, so long as I am in the will of God? That's a great answer, isn't it? What difference does it make whether we live or die, so long as we are living in company with Christ, being obedient to him, and are in the place where God has put us? And I think back to the death of my husband, Jim Elliot. When I got to know the Indians, the Alka Indians, who are now called the Waurani, and that's a long story which I haven't time to tell you today, but it is told in my book called The Savage, My Kinsman. But I got to know the Indians who had actually killed my husband and the other four missionaries. And of course I put to them the question, why did you do it? And they said, we thought the men were cannibals. We thought those white men were coming to eat us. Well, then I found out that a young woman who had had what appeared to be a very friendly contact with those five missionaries 2 days before they were killed, a young Alka woman whose name was Gimari, I found out when I asked her herself, I said, Gimari, what did you say after that friendly contact when you went back to your people? What did you tell your people about the missionaries? And she just sort of giggled and she said, I told them, they are cannibals. They are cannibals? Is that what you said? And she said, yes. And I said, why did you say that? Onongi. Onongi, which is an Alka word that means for nothing, no particular reason, just the whim of a silly girl. And of course, I thought at the time, why would God allow the silly remark of a 15-year-old girl to be perhaps the straw that tipped the scales in favor of murder, the thing that finally convinced the Alkas that they must do away with those missionaries? Perhaps that's what it was. Perhaps it was just that final word from Gimari. Yes, they are cannibals. We better get rid of them, otherwise they're going to come and kill us. Would God allow a thing like that to happen? And I thought of the story of John the Baptist. He would, and he did. But John the Baptist had no idea what God had in mind, and you and I have no idea of the intricacies of God's engineering of the events of our lives and of the lives of those we love, because he has far more people in mind. And I think of all the people who have been influenced by the death of those five men in Ecuador, tens of thousands of people, literally everywhere I go. Suppose God had not allowed that to happen through, as I've said, the silly remark, the utterly flippant remark of Gimari. Suppose he hadn't allowed that to happen. Those lives would not have been blessed. So we see once again, God moves in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. God did allow his faithful servant, John the Baptist, to be beheaded. And you remember that the last message that Jesus had sent to John the Baptist was, "Blessed is he who is not offended in me." Do we take offense at God's methods? Let's remember, he works for our best. He works from his perfect wisdom, his perfect power, and never forget this, his perfect love. May God help us to fling ourselves against the rock Jesus Christ in utter faith, in a total abandonment of ourselves, leaving behind our preconceived notions of what God is supposed to do for me, and remembering that God never does to me anything that isn't for me.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.